Well, hello again, and thanks for showing up. Thanks for listening. This is John St. Germain, broadcasting live once again from Chateau St. Germain, located in Tennessee. Tonight we have an exciting show. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy you showed up, and we have a lot to talk about tonight. Tonight we're going to talk about getting what you want. And the title of the show may be slightly misleading. It's you can get what you want as long as your wants don't defy the law, the natural laws of physics, decency, and common sense. So why don't we take a brief musical break while you assemble your working tools. Those of you who listen regularly know that you need a crystal ball, a crystal stone, a shiny object of some sort, or, barring any of that, a glass of water. So why don't we come back? And please enjoy a jazzy little Christmas number by the great pianist Oscar Peterson. Do join us just a little bit. My goodness, that pretty much describes my mood tonight. I'm in a good mood, folks. I'm in a very good mood tonight. This is just a wonderful night. And we've got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about the nature, the very nature of consciousness itself, and why we sometimes work against ourselves. We're going to discuss the hierarchy of needs, wants, and desires, and why we sometimes can't get what we want because we can't distinguish between those. But first, as you know, this is the Crystal Silence League Hour. And as you know, on the Crystal Silence League, we are an online prayer service that has evolved from the original Crystal Silence League. It was founded sometime between 1917 and 1919 by Claude Alexander Conlon, an immensely talented man. Prayer is always free on the Crystal Silence League, and please, please visit us at crystalsilenceleague.org and look us up on Facebook, and subscribe to the newsletter, which I also edit. That's also free. And please join the Crystal Silence League. We do have a couple of books that were written by our founder, Mr. Claude Conlon, Personal Lessons, Codes, and Instructions for Members of the Crystal Silence League, and also Crystal Gazing, also by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon. And these are very good instruction books, and we draw upon them quite a bit on our lessons that we speak of. Also, prayer petitions are posted on Crystal Silence League, and I tend to read a large number of those on air, and we pray for the people who post. And that is what we're going to do now. So those of you who want to join me in prayer for the next few minutes or so, please feel free to do so. And we're going to start that now. To just take a deep breath, please, with me. And now we will begin. This is prayer number 331110 LJ. Please, he wants to bring Jay home, and because he is alone, and he has forgiven Jay and only need her to return to him. We do pray for her return to LJ. Prayer number 33109 MF, praying for K and M, praying for their marriage as well. Prayer number 33108 HP, praying to Saint Rita to heal the rift between she and D. Prayer number 33106 AG, a prayer for reconciliations and apologies. Please encourage E to contact her sometime this week. We also have a prayer, KM. This is prayer number 33104, a prayer for a loved one. Please let her friend CJ reach out and talk to her. This is prayer number 33103 DL. A prayer for herself, please send the right legal counsel to her sister and to also to DL so they can have legal representation. We do hope that that happens for you. We pray for that outcome. Prayer ID number 33102 KR. Again, they want to pray, please, for another court case, for the family finances in the court case. She prays, Dear Lord, please lift me from this pit. Set my feet on solid ground. Shine your face upon me. And we pray so much for her, that to happen for her. Prayer ID number 33101 for CC. She wants healing for trauma. She's praying for her dear friend to receive the gentle touch she needs to calm her body, mind, and spirit. Please may that happen for her. Prayer ID number 33100 TB. She needs prayer for her finances. May her finances get better. May she enjoy the prosperity she needs to help her life. Prayer ID number 33099. This is for JS. General prayer for Saint Expedite to come through time and time again. A prayer of thanks for Saint Expedite. We all thank Saint Expedite. Prayer ID number 33098 DB. A prayer for employment to provide for herself and her family. Prayer ID number 33097 TM, urgent financial need. May there be peace, and may God help her with her finances. Prayer ID number 33096 HP, an urgent prayer for M and H. Prayer ID number 33095 JK, protection from danger and to stop the people who are stalking. Apparently, there's someone stalking her, and please protect her from the stalker. Prayer ID number 33093 AA. She's praying for protection from Jay, or protection for Jay. Prayer ID number 33092. Again, praying for St. Michael, Expedite, Jude, and Anthony for protection. Prayer ID number 33091 SA, praying for peace, clarity, and discernment at the help with her new job. Prayer ID number 33090 JT, been sick off and on for a year, praying for recovery from a major kidney problems. May she get better, may she heal. and prayer number 33089 EW, a general prayer request that he get this job and that his sister gets well. May that both happen. And prayer ID number 33088 EB, a prayer that MK receives clarity for what he wants to do in terms of his personal life. And prayer ID number 33087AA, prayer for M to be healed of blood clots and a burst vein in the brain. May that healing happen. And let's do one more. Prayer ID number 33086CAM, prayer for finances, and she needs a financial miracle because she's losing her home. May she be healed of her financial problems. May she enjoy the prosperity she needs, and may she have her home saved. Amen. May these blessings happen. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Crystal Silence League Hour. We have an exciting program tonight. At least I'm very excited about it. We're going to talk about how do you get what you want. And before we even launch into such a topic, we must talk about the very nature of want itself, don't we? Because we have to talk about the difference between wants, needs, and desires. And I hesitated to even make that dichotomy because isn't this a favorite topic of motivational speakers and salesmen? In fact, I can tell you a story about my brother who was in the car industry for a long time, and he tells this funny story about how his sales manager took him into the office and said, "So, Paul, I need to talk to you about wants, needs, and desires." And he got it all confused. He said, "Now, you don't need food, water, and shelter. You desire food, weight." And my brother was like, "Can I leave now?" And see, he got it all confused. Now, wanting something and needing something is obviously two different things. You know, for instance, right now I have these really nice ice cream bars in my freezer that I'm going to enjoy after the show, you know, with my good lady wife. And I want that, but I don't really need it, but I want it. And I don't really desire it, but I want it. So what's the difference between want and desire? It's a matter of intensity. We'll get to that in a moment. So after I'm through with the show, I'm going to go and enjoy that. Now, in the case that my good lady wife ate all the ice cream bars, I'm not going to be too mad about it because I don't desire it, and I don't need it. I just kind of want it. So we want things. You know, we want things in our life. Now, what about desire? Now, desire is another matter altogether. A desire, I believe, is a want that evolves to the intensity, to the point that we think we can't live without it. You see, now a need is something that we can't live without. A need is something like food and air and shelter. These are the things we can't live without. We literally can't live without food. We literally can't live without air. And it's hard to live without shelter. Sometimes you have to have shelter. These are needs. These are things that we need. Desire is a want that has evolved to the intensity that we think we can't live without it, something that we yearn for, something that we ache for. And sometimes desire isn't just about material things like cars or money, you know, or pizza, in my case. Think about how much we're driven by intangible things, like the craving for love, approval, friendship, companionship, recognition, appreciation, kindness, fame, and how much we can be hurt by the opposite, rejection, blame, guilt, loneliness, isolation, obscurity. Now, interestingly enough, there are some types of spiritual work that focus on separating yourself from those types of dependencies. On social acceptance and things like that. In the Dhammapada, which is a collection of the sayings of the Buddha, there's another one of those statements that I put in that part of my brain that remembers things. And that saying is, like a rock unmoved by the rain and wind, so are the wise unmoved by praise and blame. Now, that's a very profound thing. If you think about that rock in the middle of the ocean and the wind and the rain pounds it and it remains unmoved, the Buddha says that's how you should be, unmoved by praise or blame. This means that when people praise you, you don't bask in it, so that when they blame you, you don't despair. And it's a difficult thing to do, but it's sort of a wise thing to do. Unfortunately, it's also very difficult to do. It's a very difficult thing to do. When people blame us, we do tend to take it on ourselves, and when people praise us, we do tend to think, "Hey, yeah, I'm really something, aren't I?" Now, I'm going to tell you that desire is more like a drive. It drives us. We're driven, and we're motivated by desire. Probably when you say the word desire, you think of sexual desire, and indeed we even call it a sex drive. And I'm going to tell you that Buddhism deals a lot with desire. In Buddhism, desire is seen as a thirst or a motivation that drives us. And in fact, in Buddhism, desire is seen as the source of all suffering. Did you know that? If you look at the first and second noble truths, the first noble truth is there is suffering. Now, sometimes it's translated as life is suffering, but that's not a good translation. There is suffering. There is dukkha. And dukkha, translated, means unsatisfactoriness or stress. And the second noble truth is dukkha is caused by tanha. And the word tanha, it means literally thirst, and is commonly referred to as craving or desire. And it's understood to be the craving to hold on to pleasurable experiences, and to be separated from painful experiences, and for the neutral experiences not to decline into painful experiences. Now, in Buddhism, this thirst arises from an ignorance about the nature of reality and about the nature of self. And I don't want to go into a long discussion about the Buddhist nature of self or thirst, but this whole thing about wanting and desiring is important to our discussion. So tanha is the craving to hold on to pleasurable experiences. And this is very important for us to understand. We want to hold on to pleasurable experiences. We don't want to be separated from them, but we do want to be separated from painful experiences, and we don't want neutral experiences to decline. It's very important we understand this when we talk about getting what we want. I'm going to tell you, it's this thirst, this desire, this greed, this craving that manifests in various ways. It gives rise to all forms of suffering. And that's a very bold statement, but it's a very true statement. And the more you think about it, the more you realize it's true. It shouldn't be taken as though the first cause of suffering, the first cause of stress, because there's no first cause. There just simply isn't. Everything's interdependent with each other, and even the thirst, which is considered the cause of suffering or dukkha, depends on its arising on something else, which is sensation, the senses' ability to just feel things, because there cannot be pleasure without senses. And it goes on and on and on in this circle, which, by the way, is called codependent arising. And I don't want to go into that, but there's a whole idea that everything arises from something else. So this thirst is the most immediate cause of suffering, this craving that we have. And I'm going to tell you that there's other things attached to it in other writings, like aversion and hate, but thirst. It's a whole thirst thing. And I'm going to tell you also that this desire that we have, it's not a conscious or a chosen kind of desire. It's not a directed intent, in other words, that we think is so important. It's more of a reflex. It's a hunger. It's a desire to feed. It's like a black hole that's in us. Now we're zeroing in on it. It's like a black hole. It's a desire that's never satisfied. A hunger, a thirst that's never satisfied, because it just shifts from one target to another. When one hunger is satisfied, it goes to another. It's always there, and it might be just a small thing, a small restlessness in the back of our mind, a low level hum, or a huge gaping yearning, but it's always there. It goes from one emotional need to the next, from one sense of achievement, one conscious feeling of needing something, to another. As soon as one desire is satisfied, it's another. And this is why it's very hard to explain sometimes to people when you say that the suffering comes from desire. They say, well, if I desire ice cream and I eat it, I don't desire it anymore. It's satisfied. But now you want something else. And it's not the desire for ice cream That's the problem. It's the desire for becoming. It's the desire for always wanting. It's the desire for sensual pleasures. And sensual pleasures are very subtle, too. It's not just the sensual pleasure that we think of as sex and things like that, but to experience, like what you're doing now, listening to me, that's sensual experience. Listening to music, seeing, hearing, touching, tasting, all of this, we crave that. We also crave to be nothing. We crave to get away from unpleasant experiences, pain, old age, death, things like that. We crave to be away from that. You see how this craving permeates everything? Now, there's also another type of craving, which is more subtle, and that's the craving for opinions and ideologies and ideas and beliefs. It's everywhere. In other words, this craving, this desire. So you see the difference between wants and desires. You know, you might want a car. You might want a lover. You might want an ice cream. But this desire is what drives you. It's the obsessive craving. It's the whole. It's the motivation. And it takes its manifestation as the want. And the want may be the small thing. You know, you say, well, yeah, I think, what I want for Christmas, I want a stereo. Ooh, I want a new car. Ooh, I want this. But what is driving you? What do you yearn for? And if you happen to be a psychic reader or a counselor of any kind, you know that there are people who ache for things. They ache for love, or they ache for satisfaction. So you understand, don't you? This is a huge thing. This is not a small thing. This is a huge thing, the ability to separate wants from needs and desires. Needs are simple. You know, needs are air, food, shelter. Wants are simple. You know, wants are easy to identify, but identifying your desires, now that can get tricky. That can get tricky. When you start getting into the sense pleasures, that's wealth, sex, power. You know, you might like music. That's easy. You know, you have six senses. You have the ones that most people know, and also the mental sense, the thought sense. But then when you start thinking about attachment to ideas, ideals, views, opinions, theories, conceptions, and beliefs, that's even more subtle. You know, what are you clinging to? What is so important to you? Well, look on Facebook and see what people are clinging to on Facebook, and that'll give you a good idea. The ego drives us. That's where the source of most desire comes from, ego. And that's what's going to kill you when you're doing projection work. Desire versus need. What do you really need? What are you projecting out there? I'm going to tell you this: if you're living in a one room apartment and you're living very simply because you're very poor and you're projecting out there, oh, I want millions of dollars and I want a date, a supermodel or a Brad Pitt or something, and you're projecting all that out there, that's not going to be very good for you. Imagine if you got all that. There was a show, How the Lottery Ruined My Life. That's not what you want. That's your desire talking, and it's not going to be very good for you. So what I would like to do now is talk to you about a gentleman who studied this back in the 40s and 50s, a man named Abraham Maslow. And back in 1943, Abraham Maslow wrote a paper called A Theory of Human Motivation, which he later expanded into a book, which is on my 5-foot bookshelf. I refer to it quite often. Expanded it into a book called Motivation and Personality in 1954. Maslow created what's called a hierarchy of human need, sometimes called the pyramid. And he divided this into four tiers. It's called the Maslowian hierarchy of needs. And if you've ever studied sociology, you've studied this, or in developmental psychology. Maslow had a very interesting take on this. Most people were studying dysfunctional people to get a grasp of the human mind. Maslow said, instead of focusing on diseased people or neurotic people, mentally ill people, he said the study to I'm going to quote him, the study of crippled, stunted, immature, and unhealthy specimens can yield only a crippled psychology and a crippled philosophy. So he studied the healthiest 1% of people. The 1% of college student population, he studied Albert Einstein, Eleanor Roosevelt, and Frederick Douglass, people like this, the people he saw as very highly evolved human beings. And he developed four layers, and he called them deficiency needs. Esteem, friendship, love, security, physical needs. And if these deficiency needs are not met, with the exception of the most fundamental physiological needs, there may not be a physical indication, but the individual will feel anxious and tense. In other words, stressed, suffering, dukkha. So Maslow's theory suggests that these level of needs must be met before the individual will strongly desire the secondary or higher level needs. So the very first, and as I said, these are usually expressed as a pyramid, and the base of the pyramid is the physiological level, which we talk about as the basic needs. The physiological level, simply air, water, food. These are metabolic requirements. And you have to put, usually you put shelter in there, but he moved that up a bump. People struggling for survival. And, it's not only just poor people who are struggling for survival. If you think about it, people who get up in the morning, they don't eat breakfast, they drive through McDonald's or somewhere, and they get a sausage biscuit and a cup of really bad coffee. And I tell you, in my opinion, life's too short for bad coffee. When I was very poor, I always budgeted for coffee. When I moved into a new place, the first thing I bought was a coffee maker. They go into work, a job they don't like. They work with people that they don't like. The job's unsatisfying. They drive home. They sit in front of the television, maybe, watching shows that aren't intellectually satisfying. They go to bed and sleep poorly. Maybe they have a family to go to that they don't connect with. They don't like their family. Isn't this just survival? This is bare survival. And so this is the very base hierarchy. The very base hierarchy, mere survival. And it reminds me of that other quote that I use quite a bit of Henry David Thoreau. The majority of men live lives of quiet desperation. And on that note, what I'd like to do is pause for a word from our sponsor.
You are listening to another fine production of the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and poetical justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running conjure show on radio and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa and Ancestor Healing. This is the voice of authentic Cuban Palo and Dominican Sanse in the United States, welcoming special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic traditional religions. You can hear Candela's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front-page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 Pacific Time. And on Thursdays, From deep in the heart of Texas, where the stars at night are big and bright, there to school ya so no one can fool ya, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 Pacific time, there's no end to the surprises. All the shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in beautiful Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burmeshave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back, discussing the Maslowian hierarchy of needs. We're leaving the bare survival, and we're moving up to the second hierarchy that Maslow felt was important. This is the safety needs. And most people, when their physical needs are relatively satisfied, they move on to their safety needs, and this takes precedence. Now, in the absence of physical safety, due to war or natural disaster, people may experience post-traumatic stress disorder. This is commonly what the cause is. But safety and security needs will include personal security, the safety of the body, financial security, which for most people may range from just having a job, going to a job, to well planning, investing their money. The health aspect of it, taking care of the body, and planning ahead, thinking ahead for the future. There's a wide spectrum of the safety and security hierarchy, depending on the individual. Some people feel relatively secure with very little. Some people take extreme measures. They must have the shelter, the house, well fortified. People buy firearms. People have security systems in place. People have immense financial plans. They do financial planning, 401ks. So the safety needs are on the next level of security. Now, I will tell you that Maslow's theory says that you cannot move to the next level until you've mastered, not intellectually understood, but mastered the levels beneath. I'll also tell you that as a younger man in college, in my 20s, we discussed these quite a bit. And I'll tell you to this day, I can tell you that there are people, young people in their 20s who will tell you that they have thoroughly mastered all these levels and are self-actualized, which is the top level of the pyramid, which I think is really funny. But after the safety needs are met, you move to the social hierarchy. This is becoming one of the body, connecting with other people, connecting with the society, with the group, with the herd. The third level is interpersonal connectiveness, and this is where you can really tell a lot about an individual. This is especially strong in people. The younger you are, presumably the most important. This is why people, the need to belong, the need for affirmation is so strong that this is why people stay with abusive relationships. This is such great affirmation of Maslow's theory that we must belong somewhere. People will stay with bad families, children cling to abusive parents, people, men and women both, will cling to abusive spouses. We know as counselors that people will attempt to reunite with abusive lovers who have left them. We know that people will stay with a bad job just to belong. They may have a better job in line, but they're used to this community. This is a it's emotionally significant. It's a community they belong. So they get friendship from this. They get family, a sense of family, intimacy. This is why church is very important to people, why community is very important to people. When people are isolated from a sense of community, they become angry, depressed, often neurotic, and they strike out. And I have never seen such proof of this as you can on the internet. People who obviously have cut off all social interconnectedness, and they'll get on the internet and basically go out and look for venues where they can vent their misery. And I never have been mean to people like that. They get on internet forums and they bleed anger and hate, and I see people abuse them. And I've always tried to use what's called the principle of charity with people on the internet. I assume the best of them. You can look that up, by the way, the principle of charity. It's when someone says something, you don't assume that they're acting out of the worst motivation, but the best. And I've always tried to apply that to people, the principle of charity. You know what that means? That means when somebody says something and someone else says, "Well, what do you mean by that? You're being insulting to people of my religion," and when they didn't. And then the person says, "That's not what I meant." "Oh, yes, it is. It is. That's the opposite. You know, that's the principle of wanting to be mad over nothing." But you know, these days people are looking for a black eye. People are anxious to be offended, and that's the opposite of the principle of charity. But I've always tried to do that because I understand that these are people who have been severed from the herd, and that's how they're striking out, and it's a very sad thing. But we need to feel a sense of belonging, and we need to feel a sense of acceptance. And even counterculture people find other countercultural people to hang out with, you know, comic book geeks, guys who like card tricks, science fiction guys, you know, Star Trek-y people. But I kind of fall in a lot of those different groups. Art geeks, people who like strange music, you know, the Insane Clown Posse, Juggalos. There's just a lot of this. And people who are cut off from that plummet and spiral downward in depression, and many times don't survive. And the next level on this is esteem, the need for self-esteem and the need to be respected by others. Just the sense of being valued, to be recognized. And self-esteem is a very important thing, and also being accepted by society. Now, if you balance self-esteem with the esteem from other people, there's a wonderful sort of thing, and this is very similar. This is very, very, very close to what we talk about, personal magnetism and charisma, that Mr. Conlon talks a lot about, projecting the esteem you have from within, projecting it outward, and people respond to that. If you have self-esteem, if you have self-respect, and you have that self-confidence that Mr. Conlon talks about developing, other people respond to this. You project it out. The inferiority complex, the low self-esteem, can be attributed really from not understanding this level, not having full understanding of this level, what esteem is. And this can, you know, you can lay this to a variety of factors, but a lot of it is just you just don't understand. You just haven't done work in this area. Now, once you get past that level, you reach the apex of this, and that is self-actualization. And this is a very interesting level. Much discussion has gone into this. I know when I was a younger man, we talked about this quite a bit. Self-actualization is when you attain the highest level that you're capable of, when you've actualized your potential. There's a desire in us after we've met all these other desires, after we've mastered these other levels, to become the best we can be at something, the full potential, reach our full potential. And we realize it. You know, we have a realization, just a moment of clarity that this is what I can be. This is what I can be. So we want to accomplish everything that we can. We want to penetrate into the inner mystery of what we are and manifest it. Now, you can be very specific about this. You can say, "I want to be the world's greatest guitar player. I want to be the best wife, husband, parent, accountant. I want to be the best football player. Or I want to invent something that will change the world. I want to paint the greatest painting ever. I want to write the best novel ever." But it's an understanding of who you are. And to get there, you have to master all the other levels. So that's why it's a hierarchy. It's a ladder. You climb, you see, you climb to the top of this. Now, self-actualization is not what the Buddhists call bodhi or enlightenment. I've thought about that for a long time. It really isn't. It's because really what you accomplish with self-actualization is very similar to what Buddhists would work. It would be pre-enlightenment, really. In Bodhi or enlightenment, you cultivate desire, believe it or not. I know a lot of Buddhists argue about that. They say that you eliminate all desire, but Buddha talks about wholesome and unwholesome desires. The unwholesome desires are for physical and sensual pleasures, you know, sex and food and pretty sounds and running around and things like that. But the wholesome desires are for cultivating the paramitas, the wholesome states, and for the cultivation of the states that lead to Bodhi mind, which is a topic for another story. Now, topic for another session, but the mind that's cultivated in Buddhism has never been explained even by the Buddha. It's a type of consciousness that's that has absolutely no defilements. It perceives directly. And I have a verse here from the Pali Canon. It's called consciousness without feature, without end, luminous all around. Here water, earth, fire, and wind have no footing. Long and short, coarse and fine, fair and foul, name and form, brought to an end. With the cessation of consciousness, each here is brought to an end. And consciousness is an interesting concept, too. Buddha taught that consciousness, which is in Buddhism the quality of awareness, the quality that is aware, is a fundamental component of the universe, like mass and matter. And recently, some of the cutting-edge physicists have posited the same, that consciousness, awareness, has always been here. It's part of the universe. And some of them are naming a particle of consciousness. The consciousness is a particle, and they called it a scion. One of them called it a scion. There were some other names for it. But imagine this, that consciousness, awareness, has always been here. Always. And it's a fundamental component of the universe, like mass, like matter, like gravity, like magnetism. It's the fundamental component, a fundamental force of the universe. And that this arises again and again and again in living beings. And that this is the goal, this is the achievement. Now, we talked about purifying intent at one point, and the idea of purifying intent is to remove the defilements, to take it away, and to leave the purity of our intent. Once we decide that our wants, what we want in our life, is correct, that's what we project out. Now, I want to tell you that one of the best things I've ever learned was in a book that I've read many times, which has a lot of spells in it, and some of the spells that I've had in there. I've used so many times that I can't even tell you, but it's the black, I think it's called the black file or the black folio, and it's of course compiled by the black folder, and it's compiled by Miss Kat Ironwood, and in this are many spells, and there's a spell in there for a cut and clear, which is a spell that you use when you've broken up with someone and your heart still aches and you want to cut away from them and open your life to a new lover. I found this is, there are components of that that are very useful when you want to purify your intent. And this can be used for your life. It can be used for lovers. It can be used for your job. It can be used for any component of your life. And let's just say, for example, you are wanting to attract a lover in your life and you want to use the projection techniques that we've learned. I found it's useful to make lists for a lot of things, to attract into your life. For example, you know, people often say, why me? Why do all these things happen to me? And I want to tell you why they happen to you, because you chose them. And people get mad when I say that. They say, no, I lost my house, I lost my car, I have all these bad people I had relationships with. Well, you know, you chose them. They didn't just happen to you. And if you go through your life, and don't do this if you're in a bad mood. Don't do this if you're in a depressed mood. But if you go through your life and you think about all the bad things that happened to you, now I'm not talking about things that occurred out of your control, like disease, natural disasters, but things that you could have controlled. You'll see that it was decisions. You'll see that your small decisions led to big decisions, and these things occurred because you made decisions that made them happen, those relationships. If you lost your house, if you lost your car, if you got a bad job, these were decisions. And why did you make the decisions? Make lists. Make lists. And then what you want to do is refine your intention so that you don't do it again. So using a technique from these cut and clear spells, take a piece of paper, put a line, bad side to the left, good side to the right. And let's just say you're talking about friends. Let's say you have friends. Let's make it specific. Let's say you have a specific friend. Let's say you have a specific lover, and you know this lover is no good for you. No good. This is man or woman. No good for you. Write down all the bad things on the left, all the bad qualities on the left. Then write down the good qualities. No one is pure evil. No one is pure evil. And then write down all the good qualities on the right. Then you tear the paper in half. Now on the right side, you set that aside. On the good side, I want you to do this. Set that aside now. And we're going to use crystals for this. So I'm going to digress for a moment and tell you about a very special thing. I want a piece of gravel for this, a piece of gravel, because we're going to use a very specific type of road. You know, overpasses, interstate overpasses, where you have one road that goes over and one that goes under. You want a right angle one. This is I've been thinking a lot about this type of road. It's sort of like a crossroad, but it's an elevated crossroad. One goes over, one goes under. And if you go to that under road, that underpass, there's usually a hill on both sides covered with rock. So you want a piece of gravel, and you can take it from one of those or just find a piece of gravel. And then you want another stone for this. And just for the purposes of this, use a chrysocolla rock. It's a receptive rock ruled by the planet Venus, and its element is water, and you want to use it to attract love. It's held, you hold it sometimes to drive off fear and illusions. It's a stone of peace, it soothes the emotion, and it's a very good stone for attracting love. So you need a piece of gravel and chrysocolla. You're going to burn the bad list. And when you burn it, you have ash. You want to rub that ash into that gravel, and you're going to set it aside. Then you're going to drive by one of those overpasses, and you're going to throw that gravel into the gravel by the underpass, and you say, I'm going to cast you out. I cast you out. Now, everybody that drives by is going to take that out of your life. Now you have a good list of qualities for your lovers. Now you're going to take that good list, and that's going to be your object of focus for your projection. So you have your chrysocolla, and you can have one of these or three of these, but you're going to use it for your projection. Now chrysocolla looks a lot like turquoise. You can mistake it for turquoise, but it's not. It looks like turquoise. So you put this in your hand, and you put your crystal ball on it, and you take those good qualities, and you add to them, add some more things to them, add a few more things to them, and you look in your crystal ball, and you project that out, and you say, you're the person that I'm meant to be with. You're looking for me like I'm looking for you. Come to me. Come to me. Come to me. Come to me. I'm looking for you. You're looking for me. Come to me. And you project that out, as we've learned. And now you have projected it out. Now you draw it back in, as we have learned. You draw that back in. And when you draw it back in, you're charging that chrysocolla. And you can carry that with you as a talisman. And you just keep doing it. You keep doing this. And the piece of gravel that you put that list with of the negative traits, every time people drive by, you visualize it as you throw it. Every time someone drives by, part of yourself, you know, I cast you out. Everybody take this away from me. Every time people drive by, this is, I think it's like a piece of crossroad work. Every time people drive by, they take that out of your life. And your intention is now purified. Do this with your job. Write down all the bad things about your job and all the things you like about it. Do it about everything in your life. Go back in your life. Now, I'm going to tell you about dealing with the past. when you don't go through the path, and especially when you start getting, Catherine calls it a hierarchically designated crossroads, and you use the Chrysocolla to track the good list and things you want. Yes, indeed, you do. I want to tell you about the past. When you start dwelling among the past, that's a, you know, I hate that place. I hate that place. You may start beating yourself up, but don't. You know, a long time ago there was a show, and really what got me into Buddhism, people say, how did you get into Buddhism? Well, I studied Burmese Kung Fu, and when I was 14, and my instructor turned over to me the Tao Te Ching and a little book on Buddhism, but mainly I really think it was this television show with David Carradine called Kung Fu, and I just thought that was really cool. I said, you know, here you had a guy who was a man of peace. You know, Bruce Lee was cool at that time too, but Bruce Lee was going around kicking everybody's rear end. But you know, Kwa Chang Kang wanted peace. He studied Kung Fu, and he never wanted to fight. And it was because he was a Buddhist. And if you remember Master Po, the old blind guy, he was so cool. And there was a scene where he accidentally, I think he bumped into one of the emperor's men, and the emperor's soldier slapped him. And Master Po bowed and said, you know, I apologize. Well, then the soldier went to slap him again, and Master Po blocked the punch and pushed the guy back, and he said, even an old blind man shouldn't be punished twice for the same crime, for the same offense. And every time I think about my past, and, you know, we all have regrets. I'm 55 years old. You don't live to be half a century without having a lot of regrets. Every time I think back on my past, you know, things that I wish I'd done differently and things I wish I hadn't said, and, you know, people say, I wish I could take a time machine and turn the hands of the clock back and redo this. Every time I start thinking like that, you know what I say? Even an old blind man shouldn't be punished twice for the same crime.
Never assume that because a man has no eyes, he cannot see. Close your eyes. What do you hear?
I hear the water. I hear the birds.
Do you hear your own heartbeat?
No.
Do you hear the grasshopper, which is at your feet?
Old man, how is it that you hear these things?
Young man, how is it that you do not?
Isn't that nice? Well, we're getting toward the end of the show. It's going to be time for our meditation for the night. And you know, thank you so much for tuning in. We even got our stone and spell of the weekend in time, didn't we? And do dwell upon some of the things that we talked about tonight, needs, desires, and wants, and the difference between them. And as you project your needs and wants and desires out into the world, do keep those in mind. And remember, don't pollute those, and don't weaken them with doubt, and no self-doubt, no self-worries, no impurities. And remember, anytime you want a lesson in what not to do, just pull up on the internet somewhere, How the Lottery Destroyed My Life, and watch one of those episodes. That will be a very humbling lesson, believe you me. So as we prepare for our meditation, just get comfortable. And again, if you're operating a motor vehicle or any other dangerous equipment, stop doing so or just turn off now. What we're going to do now is very much like a hypnotic induction. So just relax, and we're going to start now. So take a deep breath. And split it out. And another breath. Let it out. And this third one. When you let it out like that, shrug it all off, just shake it off. It's been a tough week. And now just settle in and let the relaxation flow from your body, from the head down, and push it down, down, down as it goes down. Like warm water flowing down from the top of your head, down your shoulders. And with each deep, relaxing breath you take, more and more relaxation, more and more relaxed, deeper and deeper into your relaxation, warm and soft and relaxed. And breathe. And I'd like you to concentrate on your breath as it goes in and out. And imagine it as a cycle, as a circle. In and out. In and out at your own pace. And imagine it as a big wheel, just a cycle of wind. And as you breathe it in, you're breathing in very good, pure air. And as you breathe it out, you're breathing out all the impurities, all the stress. Just blow it out. What you breathe in is bright and white and pure. And what you blow out is all drab, all the stress. Breathe it out. And as you breathe it out, it turns into butterflies and birds and flies away. And just let it go. And you breathe in pure white light. And you breathe out butterflies and birds, and they fly away. And as they fly away, they take away all the stress. All the stress with you. And you breathe in pure white light. And you breathe out butterflies and birds. And they fly away. And they fly away. And they fly away. I'd like you to pick a point on the horizon far, far away. And that's where the birds and the butterflies fly off. And you fly with them. And you breathe in pure white light. And you breathe out butterflies, birds, and they fly away toward the horizon, and you fly with them. You fly away, you fly away, you fly away. And you become more and more relaxed and deeper into this relaxation. Warm and soft, and you fly away toward the horizon. White light. And out. Birds and butterflies, and off they fly. Off they go toward the horizon. And it's so peaceful. And now, take one last deep breath. And let it out. And if your eyes are closed, open them. And let the circulation return to your hands and your feet, and you breathe normally. And please stay tuned. Please stay tuned, and please wake up and be wide awake. And please stay tuned. And please be wide awake. And please stay tuned for our next good program on the streets of Beverly Smith. Joining us. I'm John St. Germain. This has been Crystal Silent Sleep Hour. please join us next week at the same time and the same place. Our show will be